A man was bothered with continual ringing in his ears, bulging eyes, and a flushed face. Over a period of 3 years, he went from one doctor to another. One took out his tonsils, one removed his appendix, another pulled all his teeth. He even tried a goat gland treatment in Switzerland, all to no avail. Finally, one doctor told him there was no hope. He had 6 months to live. The poor fellow quit his job, sold all his belongings, and decided to live it up in the time that he had left. He went to his tailor and ordered several new suits and shirts. The tailor measured his neck and wrote down 16 and a half. The man corrected him, 15 and a half. The tailor measured again, 16 and a half. But the man insisted that he had always worn a size 15 and a half. "Well, all right," said the tailor. "Just don't come back here complaining if you have ringing ears, bulging eyes, and a flushed face." I see Mary going like this. I'm going to try to get a little closer to the mic here. Clearly, being wrong can be hazardous to your health. Often we are wrong by having simply been misinformed or relying on outdated information. Perhaps the man in the story was a 15 and a half, 20 years and 20 pounds ago. And perhaps vanity played a part in this story. How many of us can actually get a clear and accurate picture of ourselves, or even want to? In my mind's eye, I am 30-something. It's really hard to grasp that I'm pushing 60 now. And when harsh light and a good mirror make the crow's feet and sagging neck skin all too apparent, I step away from the mirror, comforting myself that I'm at least wiser now than I was 25 years ago. Sometimes I'm wiser, but still fairly often I jump into the island of conclusions, which invariably leads to misery. But I think perhaps I spend a little less time there. Let me tell you about such a time. Last month, on my birthday, this was the plan. We were going to drive up to Point Reyes for the morning and afternoon, take a hike, have a picnic, come back and drop off Isaiah with a babysitter, and then join some friends for dinner out and a concert. It was a great plan, and the day dawned sunny and gorgeous. I awoke to discover that sometime during the night, Peter had left our bed and moved into the living room to sleep on the couch. This is due to the fact that, along with the indignities of wrinkles and sagging skin, my aging body has now begun to snore upon occasion. Peter's an extremely light sleeper, and he can't sleep if I'm snoring, so if poking me a few times doesn't do the trick, he retires to the living room. Well, I felt bad about having disturbed his sleep, so I convinced Isaiah to be as quiet as a mouse so Daddy could sleep. So Isaiah listened to his book on tape on headphones, and I packed our lunch, and Peter slept, and slept, and slept. Around 10 a.m., he finally got up. I'd sort of figured we'd be on the road by 10 a.m., but Peter needed to have some breakfast, and then he needed to take a run before we left, and while he was getting ready to take his run, he somewhat sheepishly admitted to me that after he'd gotten up last night, he stayed up and read for 3 hours before he went back to sleep. My crazy night owl husband, just sneaking in a little recreational web surfing the night before my birthday. Okay, so he went running, and I cleaned up the kitchen, put in a load of laundry, looked at my watch, answered some emails, looked at my watch, told myself, relax, it's your birthday. Just decide to win no matter what. We'll get there. We might not spend as much time there as you'd hope, but that's okay. Just decide to be happy. Okay, so Peter cares more about his own needs than yours. That's healthy. It doesn't make him a bad person. It makes him normal. You didn't tell him you wanted to leave at a certain time. Blah, blah, blah. It wasn't working. My inner baby bird was squawking and would not shut up. It's my birthday. This is the one day of the year when he should be devoted to me and my desires. What a selfish jerk. He stays up half the night reading and then has to sleep the morning away on my birthday. And now he's out running and taking his sweet time about it. And he told me days ago that he would help make our picnic lunch, and that sure as hell isn't happening. He is selfish, 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 and he's ruining my birthday. The 20th century Taoist philosopher and writer Wei Wu Wei wrote, "Why are you unhappy? Because 99.9% of everything you do is for yourself, and there isn't one." Well, birthdays are such a setup, aren't they? To make you think there is a self, and furthermore, that self had better be catered to by your significant other if he knows what's good for him. Well, he finally returned from his run, and though I had vowed to myself to win no matter what, just to be happy, I couldn't stop myself. The words flew out of my mouth before I could stop them. "We're sure not going to have much time in Point Reyes. I'll just take a quick shower and we'll be on our way." He showered. I seethed. He came out of the bathroom and went to the bedroom to get dressed. I followed him into the bedroom and closed the door and sat on the bed and said, "I need your help. I'm losing. I'm being a loser. I've been trying to tell myself to just relax, go with the flow. It's your birthday. Just decide to be happy. But I can't do it. The story I'm telling myself is that you were selfish to stay up half the night reading, and now you're taking all this time to go get your run in. And I thought we'd be on the road an hour ago. And I'm blaming you that we're not. And I'm losing. I'm losing. It's my birthday, and I'm losing. I need your help. I don't want to be losing." I immediately realized I'd done exactly the right thing. Like the traveler at the magic castle, admitting that I'd lost my way was the key. For Peter didn't get defensive or angry at me as he would have had I come in full of righteous indignation, full of the righteous indignation I'd been feeling throughout the morning. He took my hands in his and looked at me with such love and tenderness and said, "Oh, baby, I'm so sorry. I can totally understand how you could feel that way. That makes a lot of sense. Let's go right now. It'll take just another minute to get dressed. We'll have a good couple of hours in Point Reyes if we leave now. We'll have a great afternoon. Thanks for telling me." I was disarmed. All the anger melted away. My guy was on my side. He understood me. He wanted me to have what I wanted. And, in truth, we all went on to have an incredibly lovely afternoon. And he told me later that asking for his help that way was one of the best things I had ever done. And, you know, I didn't know what I was going to do when I went into the bedroom. I knew that blaming him for my unhappiness was wrong. Very familiar, but wrong. But it didn't occur to me to say, "I need your help," until I heard the words coming out of my mouth. I think maybe grace flows in when we're willing to let go of righteous indignation, when we're willing to admit we're wrong. The prize-winning poet, novelist, and Zen teacher, Henry Shukman, wrote in the spring edition of Tricycle magazine, in his article entitled, "The Art of Being Wrong," "Humility is, after all, the ground zero of spirituality. Peace and kindness have their best shot at establishing themselves when we accept our own inadequacy. When limitation and error become aspects of ourselves, we can embrace rather than strive to mask." Or, more simply, being wrong can be the best thing that ever happened to us. Shukman then goes on to cite a powerful fictional example of this in Tolstoy's short novel, Master and Man, which takes place on a single winter's night. A wealthy businessman, accompanied by his servant, heads off into a terrible snowstorm in a horse-drawn sleigh. He has sniffed a business opportunity and can't bear to let the weather delay him. The businessman rides wrapped up in furs while his servant shivers beside him in miserable rags. The weather worsens. They get lost and finally stuck in a drift. Night wears on, and though the master realizes his servant is severely cold, he worries only about his business dealings and the cigarettes he can't manage to light. It's a night of hell. But somewhere in the middle of it, the master notices his servant is actually dying of the cold. Spontaneously, against all his prior impulses, he rips open his fur coat and covers the dying man with all the warmth he can muster. In that one act of perfect self-sacrifice, all his troubles drop away, and a sweet, delirious joy, unlike anything he has ever known, sweeps over him. It is surely one of fiction's great experiences, this moment when selfishness turns on its head, and to his own amazement, the man discovers what an error his instinct for self-preservation has been, blocking him from a far greater life. That man's discovery, for me, captures the whole purpose of human existence. What are we doing here? A couple of weeks ago at the last Live Oak service, any of you lucky enough to be here got to hear Darlene Pagano in her wonderful homily when she talked a bit about credo statements, our personal philosophies about what life is all about. I think at this point in my life, anyway, my credo statement would be, we are here to recognize our connection to all of life, to everything that is, and we are here to learn to love better. But people can be so annoying, can't they? Downright unlovable sometimes. And then there's our own wounded inner child, our dark shadow side, full of fear, rearing its needy little head so often, blinding us to anything but our own survival. There is more love somewhere, and we're here to find it within ourselves. Sometimes the only way to find it is to be like the weary traveler and admit we have lost our way. May we each have the courage and wisdom at those times to realize and admit we are lost, so that we might discover the magic castle where there is more love, more hope, more joy, and more peace. May it be so.
More.